Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Tiger Woods just completed the greatest comeback in the history of sports. I've got the Masters on like most of you do right now. Just flat out phenomenal. Unbelievable, riveting television all day. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, this is the greatest comeback in the history of sports. I'm not sure anything else is even a close second. This was, they just showed the shot, if you are a dad, of Tiger Woods hugging his dad back in 1997, 22 years ago, and then hugging his son. That was an incredible pull by CBS. I don't know how you keep a dry eye if you are a dad at all. To see the trajectory of his life over 22 years and to see what he was just capable of, holding out, withstanding everybody else's best shot, I don't know how you could not have been rooting for Tiger Woods if you are a sports fan and you have a soul at all. I mean, extraordinary. The reaction on 18 at Augusta, everybody chanting Tiger, this is as good of a moment in sports as you can find. And a couple of stats that I want to use here to put it into context. Tiger, 4 surgeries on his back, 4 surgeries on his knees. 11 years ago was the last time that we saw him win a major. 11 long years ago. But just 16 months ago, I want you to keep this in context. Just 16 months ago, Tiger Woods was ranked 1,199th in the world. Nobody gave him a shot at all to win a major ever again. People questioned whether he was ever going to be able to play golf again, much less contend to win a major like he just did, outlasting everyone at Augusta on Sunday in the red dry fit turtleneck mock getup that he wears. This took us all back into time, and I think it's an integral lesson for everybody out there. No matter who you are, it's an important lesson. No matter who you are, you control what is possible in your life. No one else does. And I think that's why sports is such an incredible lesson to everybody out there, and why over and over and over again, it's what I come back to: the primacy of the individual, you, no one else, not one person on the planet controls what you are capable of, but you. And imagine the willpower it took for Tiger Woods. Yes, you're going to have stumbles. Yes, you're going to have pratfalls. Yes, many of those may be of your own design, because as humans, we are imperfect and we also often make bad decisions. But to have him be able to be so mentally strong that he could withstand all of these slings and arrows of derision and rise up to win a championship like he just did again is, I think, the most compelling comeback story in the history of sports. I was rooting for Tiger Woods. You were probably rooting for Tiger Woods if you have a soul. And again, that moment that they put together for CBS of his first win back in 1997 when Jim Nantz memorably intoned a win for the ages, and being able to see him hug his son, I'm gonna choke up myself here, because if you're around my age, that's kind of what your life trajectory has been, right? You move in life from son to father. Choking up myself here. I don't see how you could not have watched this and been moved by what you saw, man. It was an extraordinary moment. I think if you are a dad, it's about as good of a moment as you could have happen. And I gotta say, props to Tiger Woods for what he was able to accomplish today. Just outstanding. A lot of you saying SBAP. It's a good time to SBAP. To sit back and reflect. I'm going to watch the interview now. I'm going to watch the presentation. But, man, just flat out incredible. Flat out extraordinary. Love all of you guys. DBAP unless you need to SBAP. Props to Tiger. Props to the Masters for getting it done again. And for an early morning breakfast rise with Augusta. I'm going to go watch Tiger now. I'm interested to see this interview. Love all of you. Kisses from me. I'll be back tonight for Game of Thrones, which should be pretty extraordinary. Live version of Game of Thrones. Immediate reaction tonight. What a Sunday we've all got. DBAP unless you need to SBAP. I'm Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Show. Going to go watch Tiger be interviewed now. But what a ride. What a show. What a performance. The reminder, as always, only you control what happens in your life. Kisses to all of you. See ya. Welcome in to Outkick the Show, Game of Thrones reaction show edition. I've got a ton of notes to get to, like a big fat nerd, or at least a big nerd. I have got everything that I took down, 1,000 words of notes that I took down over the course of today's show. I have a lot to get to. I know that everybody's fired up and everybody's ready to roll. Appreciate all of you coming to join me here. I'll have a column up writing about this. I'm fired up. I'm going to write about it tonight. I'm going to stay up late, probably be up till midnight before I get back. But I'm going to start off and move in a chronological fashion. All right. So I understand that a lot of you want to talk about the way things end or particular segments that stood out to you. But I want everybody to know that the way that I'm going to approach these final six episodes is by starting off with what we, you know, working through as we learn, as my notes move in a chronological fashion through the episode, all right? By the way, I'm Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Show. We've been doing this for a couple of years now, live on both Facebook and Periscope, reacting. All right, first overarching story that I thought here. This was, to me, an introduction to Game of Thrones. It was like we're going to get all the band back together again. There weren't a lot of fireworks. I thought that there was going to be more fireworks in episode one, but what we really got was a lot of the threads that had finished off at the end of season seven finally becoming well-known in the totality. And it's interesting, in a circular fashion, we have brought basically everybody back to Winterfell in the same way that they were all at Winterfell early in season one before everybody went off on their different journeys. Now they've all come back to Winterfell to complete their journey in some way. All right, let's start off with the opening scene. Final scene, season seven, is the Ice Dragon taking down the Wall, which was amazing, right? We've been waiting since August of 2017 to see what else was going to happen, and we get the opening line, which, let's be honest, the dick humor in Game of Thrones has been off the charts the past few years. This was a Tyrion opening line, season eight. Tyrion and Varys are driving in a cottage, in like a carriage, on their way to Winterfell, and Tyrion, the opening line for season eight is, "You should consider yourself lucky. At least your balls don't freeze off." That's Tyrion to Varys, which is pretty phenomenal, all right? And then we get to creepy-ass Bran. Creepy-ass Bran is right there hanging out in Winterfell, and everybody's all excited to see each other, and we can immediately see that we're going to have female drama between Daenerys and Sansa. The instant that they see each other, Sansa's like, "I've always been the best-looking woman that has ever existed in any room that I've ever entered." Maybe with the possible exception of Marjorie Tyrell, right? In the history of the show, maybe you can have some of the Sand Snake arguments. I don't think they were ever in the same room. But now Sansa's got hotness. She doesn't have hot girl privilege anymore. She's got conflict, and almost immediately we can see what's going on here. Bran says, "We don't have time for all this. The Night King has your dragon. The Wall has fallen. The dead march south." This dude just absolutely drops bombs everywhere, and it's always uncomfortable. Creepy ass Bran. Tyrion says the Lannisters are on the way. He thinks he's made a deal with Cersei. What we know, because of the way season seven ended, it's actually just Jaime Lannister, pretty much, all right? Then we finally get Arya and Jon having a discussion. It's unclear exactly where Arya's loyalties are going to lie. She's unhappy, as Sansa is, that Jon has bended the knee to Daenerys. He left a king. He has returned not a king. We get this awesome update where Cersei's top lieutenant, her new hand, says, "I have terrible news. The dead have broken through the wall." And Cersei, in one of the most rock-bottom, just cold deliveries ever, says, "Good." All right. So then we get Euron and Yara. Euron says he wants to fuck the queen, so he is after the queen. The two have sex. He then quizzes them on how he compares to the king and the king's slayer. She says, "You might be the most arrogant man I've ever met." I like that, Cersei says of Euron. I have a pretty strong feeling here that Cersei is going to kill Euron. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I feel pretty comfortable that it's going to happen. Then we get Bronn, who I'm in love with. Bronn of the Blackwater. Bronn is trying to have a foursome. There are three naked women, and he's talking with them about the fact that he's actually shot a dragon. And they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about everybody else, which is phenomenal. Bronn has, like, fought a dragon, everything else, and all the girls want to talk about is somebody else. And he says, "Can we stop talking about the fucking dragons now?" Then the new queen's hand comes in, the old maester comes in, and then he says, "She's got the pox. She doesn't have much longer." And Bronn says, "Which one?" Which is such an amazing answer, such an amazing Bronn line. I absolutely love Bronn. I love everything about him. He's maybe my favorite character on the show, but his response to "she's got the pox" to ask "which one" is so incredible to hear Bronn of the Blackwater there. Then we get Theon, who arrives, and we also have, by the way, more jokes about how Euron and Yara are the only two that still have balls left. And then we get the show up moment where we get Theon saving. She gives him a headbutt, and then they're sailing away. And this is kind of an integral moment. I think we've talked about it for a while. The White Walkers can't cross water, so there is a little bit of a hint here that potentially the place where all of the Seven Kingdoms could retreat is to the Iron Islands, right? So we get a little bit of a foretelling there, where if everybody gets wiped out at Winterfell, Yara is telling Theon, "Hey, this is where everybody's going to fall back to." So the Iron Islands are, at least in theory, if you've been paying attention, we have had a theory for a while that the White Walkers can't cross water, right? They have to be able to cross water. Now, maybe if the water freezes, things could be different there. But, you know, and we don't know, maybe that water around the Iron Islands could freeze. But I think that's a pretty important little nugget there, because it suggests that maybe there could be a battle not just fought at Winterfell, but also fought further south in the Iron Islands. Now, the White Walkers are spreading winter everywhere they go, so there's also the possibility they could freeze the water and be able to walk across it. But remember, that's one little bit of helpful knowledge to have filed away. If you can create separation between yourself, a body of water, and them, you could theoretically be somewhat safe. Okay, then we get into what I would call a bachelor, like a one-on-one date on The Bachelor. Jon hops on the dragon, and he and Daenerys have a romantic dragon flight to some random place where there's beautiful waterfalls, and they have all sorts of ridiculous lines there. "It's cold up here for a southern girl," says Jon Snow in a line that every man who is dating a girl from the south should steal immediately. "It's cold up here for a southern girl, so keep your queen warm," Daenerys says in response. I mean, I'm not kidding. As I was watching this, it really legitimately felt like a bachelor one-on-one date, except instead of going in like a helicopter, they went on a dragon. And so they fly the dragons down into the waterfalls. And I kind of halfway expected for a country music act to come out from behind the waterfall and start playing. And then there's suddenly a big crowd and everybody starts dancing. It was insanely cheesy. All right. An insanely cheesy part of the show. And I'm like, I waited 18 months for a crappy bachelor date on the greatest television show of all time. They could have at least had a hot sex there in the snow, or something interesting could have happened other than them just flying there. I also was thinking, what if Jon Snow just fell off the dragon? This also, by the way, as if we had any doubt, proves that he's a Targaryen because he's the dragon. I think there are three dragons left alive. I think that you're going to find out that Tyrion is also a dragon, by the way. That Tyrion, Daenerys, and Jon all have Targaryen blood. So then we get the Gendry and Arya flirtation. Gendry, big strong arms because he's been rowing for like three seasons. And now he's just hammering away making the Dragonstone. Big strong buff Gendry. And now Arya's like throwing game at him. We also get the interaction with the Hound, who is one of my other favorite characters. He says, "You're a cold little bitch, aren't you? Guess why that's why you're still alive." First he says, "You left me to die." And then she says, "First I robbed you." And then you get an unbelievable, "You're a cold little bitch, aren't you? Guess what? That's why you're still alive." All right? Gendry and Arya are flirting there. So maybe there's going to be a little bit of Stark and Baratheon love there. Because remember, Gendry is the bastard child of Robert Baratheon. Also has a claim on the Iron Throne. People out there didn't recognize. I think Tyrion is a Targaryen. Because there is a suggestion, if you go back and watch, that his father is not the Lannister that he kills. That his mom may have had an affair with the Targaryen. And so that is one reason why purportedly there is so much bad blood between Tywin Lannister, who was the father of Cersei and Jaime and Tyrion. I think that Tyrion is also a Targaryen. That's my theory. I'll write about this a little bit more, but if you go back and watch it, you can also remember a couple of years ago when Daenerys had the dragons down in the catacombs. Tyrion was able to approach them, and the dragons didn't attack them. That's one sign that you might have Targaryen blood. That's also why some people believe, like my wife, that the Night King is a Targaryen, because he was able to fly on the Ice Dragon. Now, maybe the rules are different when you're the Night King and it's an Ice Dragon and he has dominion over every sort of figure there is. We don't know, but that's at least a theory that the Night King might have at one point in time been a Targaryen. Then we get a Sansa and a Jon discussion about how much she trusts him. He says, do you have any faith in me at all? She says, "You know I do." He says, "She'll be a good queen for all of us, and she's not like father." And then Sansa cuts in. Again, we got hot girl conflict. "No, she's much prettier. Did you bend the knee to save the North, or because you love her?" Boom. Dramatic, melodramatic question. Could have been phrased in Dallas back in the day. The melodrama growing there. Then we get Samwell. He finds out that Daenerys killed his father and his brother, the Tarleys, the greatly named Dickon Tarley. If you remember him correctly, she had him burned by the dragons for refusing to bend the knee. And then Samwell is stunned by this revelation. He comes outside, and who is there sitting in the darkness watching everything but creepy-ass Bran right there. And creepy-ass Bran says, it's time to tell Jon the truth, because Jon and Samwell Tarly have both figured out that Jon is actually the true king and that he's the product of Rhaegar Targaryen. All right? So, we get Sam. He finds Jon in the crypt. And this is the point in the show where, for whatever reason, they decide to film everything so that it's pitch black and it's almost impossible to see anything. I don't know about you guys. I had my laptop taking notes and I had to turn off all the lights and I still couldn't see anything. It was like watching a pitch black television. I'm thinking to myself, they spent $15 million filming this show and they couldn't actually give us just a tad bit of light. We understand it's dark, it's cold, it's nighttime. Just show us a little bit. Just one candle, just something so you can actually tell what's going on. So Jon, I believe, is in front of his father's crypt. He's in front of Ned Stark, who of course was decapitated in season one. And Sam comes down, he says, I'm not talking about the King of the North. I'm talking about the bloody King of the Seven Kingdoms. Your mother was Lyanna Stark and your father was Rhaegar Targaryen. You've never been a bastard. You're the true heir to the Iron Throne. Says that your father, Ned Stark, lied to protect you. You're the true king. John then realizes almost immediately, you can see him thinking to myself, oh, thinking to himself, oh my God, I've been screwing my aunt. I've got the hottest aunt of all time. This, by the way, would kill on Pornhub, right? This is like the most popular Pornhub video of all time. Hot stepmom, hot stepsister, hot step aunt, half aunt, whatever it is. That's what I'm told is always trending on Pornhub. So this is just George R.R. Martin just completely aware of what people are into these days. And so then we have to find out the ultimate question. You gave, and this is the question of the show that I would say, that Samwell is asking. You gave up your crown to save your people. Would she do the same? And that is the question. You gave up your crown to save your people. Would she do the same? Then we fully go pitch black. You can't see anything except Tormund, at least, is still alive. We didn't see Brienne of Tarth in this episode, but eventually they're going to create the most dynamic killing machine known to man, right, whenever those two have a baby. And so you get Tormund, who's walking around, and I got questions for you guys at this point, because we find the little kid that had been sent to get reinforcements, and the little kid went to get reinforcements, and on the wall, in one of the creepiest scenes, there have been a lot of creepy scenes in Game of Thrones, the kid is all cut up, right? The kid is all cut up. He is right there. And when the kid's still alive over their shoulder, and when he stabs him, immediately everything has to come to the light. The fire blows up. He knows that they are closer to Winterfell than he is. They're trailing them from behind. And it's the old gods coming for the new. I don't know. I'm open to your ideas for what exactly the fire symbol was. But this is utterly extraordinary, right? Just an overwhelming moment to potentially close out that scene. Then episode 1, season 1. What does it mean? The faith of the seven symbol. We've seen those symbols a few times throughout the series. I thought that it was maybe a Targaryen symbol. That's what my wife said. Is it a Targaryen symbol? What exactly is going on? That was the White Walker symbol, but is it a Targaryen symbol? There's going to be a lot of discussion about exactly what symbol that was. And then we get Jaime. He's the only one of the Lannisters who is arriving. He arrives, pulls off the hood. What's the first thing he sees is right there, Bran, creepy-ass Bran, of course, who is waiting to see everybody. And right then and there, we get that moment where we have not had, where they make eye contact for the first time since he caught Jaime and Cersei having sex in the tower, and Jaime just shoved him right out the window. Now, the look on Bran is incredible, but also to me, this represents the trajectory of Jaime Lannister, who has gone over the course of the 8 seasons from maybe the most despicable character in all of Game of Thrones to maybe the most redeemed character in all of Game of Thrones. I think his character arc, if you consider the distance that he has covered relative to everyone else, I think that he has proved that he has evolved as a character more so than anybody else, from a thoroughly detestable, unlikable brute who's capable of killing a child to the point where he is now one of the most beloved characters in the kingdom. As one of you just said, he's the Tiger Woods of Game of Thrones. So that is the story of episode 1. What questions do you guys have? What stands out for you guys? I'm going to go now, right? This is pretty outstanding stuff. I thought, again, overall, this episode we're going to get the band all back together again. I know we only have 6 episodes. I was hoping and expecting for a little bit more fireworks, but I'm hopeful that this means episode 2 is going to have a lot of fireworks and that they're going to finish on a real rush. I didn't think this was an extraordinary episode. I didn't think this stood out in any way as being a blockbuster. This is why I'm nervous about there only being 6 episodes left. I asked the question, could Game of Thrones episode 1, season 8 live up to the Masters? I think the answer is right now, no. I don't think that Game of Thrones can live up to what we saw at the Masters with Tiger Woods earlier. All right, 5 more episodes left, 6 episodes, season 8. What questions do you... How would I rank this as an episode? I'd probably give it a 6.5. The reason why I would give it a 6.5 is most all of the revelations that we got in this episode, we already knew, even if the characters themselves did not know. To me, this was an episode to catch up all of the characters that are in the show so that they now have all the knowledge working going forward that we already had. It was a little bit strange that we all knew who Jon Snow's father and mother were, and Jon Snow did not know. And so now he has that knowledge, and the tension of what is Daenerys going to do with this knowledge now that she theoretically understands that his claim to the Iron Throne is better than hers. So I think this was about kind of bringing everybody to Winterfell. Again, it's kind of a mirror image of season one. For the people who are still alive, they're all ending up at the same place. And I think it's significant in the grand scheme of things for that reason. They've already told us exactly how long every other episodes are. Yes. Is it worth the money to sign up if you're not in HBO? Yes. Look, Game of Thrones, I think this is true. I was talking to my wife right before this episode started tonight. I think that Game of Thrones is the last dramatic television series, maybe of my life and maybe of your life, that we'll all watch together. And what I mean by that is everything else now immediately is going up where you can watch every episode at once. I'll be honest with you guys. If Game of Thrones was all being released right now on HBO Now and I could watch 6 hours straight, I probably would stay up until 3 a.m. watching every episode tonight. I'd watch the entire series and I'd be ready to talk about it all tomorrow. I wouldn't sleep. That's how much I would be all invested in it. I think going forward, news and sports will continue to be big event television. I'm not sure that we'll still have the same episodic television. For instance, I'm a huge Stranger Things fan. When Stranger Things comes on July 4th, I might sit and watch almost the entire Stranger Things episode all at once. So this is one of the last great episodic, I think, television events that we will all experience as a group. And in future years, I think the idea that something like this ever existed will seem crazy. What I think is crazy is that HBO is willing to just end Game of Thrones, because I would continue to watch this thing for another 5 or 10 years. I'm just telling you guys, that's the truth. So I appreciate all of you. I am going to go write my article now. If you are a fan of what I do, I've done it for season 4, 5, 6, 7, and now 8. There's about 60 or 70,000 words that I have written about the Game of Thrones television series, and I'm going to go write that as well. I appreciate all of you. I know there's going to be a prequel, but it'll be totally different. Just like the prequel for Breaking Bad is totally different. I understand, so it's going to have totally different characters and everything else. I love all of you. My name is Clay Travis. DBAP, unless you need to SBAP, I'm going to go right now. We will be back shortly after that. I'll be live tomorrow. We're going to talk about this, take phone calls live on my Outkick the Coverage morning radio show, all 50 states. You can listen to it anywhere in the country. You can stream it, foxsportsradio.com. You can listen to it on satellite radio. You can find it everywhere. Winter, somebody just said, winter is here and Tiger is back. I appreciate all of you. My name is Clay Travis. SBAP, unless you need to. DBAP, we'll do a live Game of Thrones reaction every single Sunday night. And like I said, by midnight tonight, there will be several thousand words from me up discussing this show. Kisses. See you guys. Bye. Love you. Thank you, Facebook. See y'all.